Welcome to Fun and Fundraising, everybody, the podcast where we talk with people behind top nonprofit galas and signature fundraising events to showcase how they positively transform their communities. I am your host, Rob Giardinelli, and today I'm really excited to have two wonderful guests on. We have Tiffany Divis, who is the president and CEO, and Chris Denny, who is the director of advancement for the Turtle Creek Conservancy. And it's one of the best run preservation organizations, I really think, in the country, but certainly within the Dallas area. And they have a wonderful event coming up that's celebrating probably one of the most fun themed parties that I like to go to every year, and that is a Kentucky Derby themed party. And their event's going to be called Day at the Races. And over the next, our time together today, we're going to talk a little bit about their organization and what they do to make their event really one of Dallas's top events to attend in May as the social season winds down there. So with that, Tiffany, Chris, welcome. And we're so excited to have you both on as guests today.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're excited to be here.
So, Chris, I'm going to direct the first question to you. Can you talk a little bit about what the mission of the Turtle Creek Conservancy is?
Yes. We are a 501c3 nonprofit, and our mission is the conservation, preservation, and exceptional care of Turtle Creek Park and Arlington Hall, while striving to create a public space for physical and mental wellness, connection, entertaining, and educational programs.
You know, that's great. So it sounds like really, because that's a whole host of different things. So really what I've always viewed, you know, that space is, it's almost a hub for Turtle Creek to me. And, you know, everything else that goes on around it are kind of the spokes, and you all are the hub that really kind of brings the community together with all those majestic spaces. So, you know, thank you for sharing, you know, the mission, you know, the mission of the organization. And, you know, what I like, you know, I think it's always important for people to understand and realize that there's so many different ways that people can get involved with an organization. So we'll start this question with Tiffany, and then Chris, I'd like your response as well. But I'd love to hear how each of you got involved with the Turtle Creek Conservancy and, you know, what makes you so passionate about the organization. And as I said, Tiffany, I'd love for you to go first.
Okay, well, coming out of COVID, I was trying to decide what my next career move would be. And I had three friends that actually brought this position to my attention. And so it was, you know, I interviewed and got the job. So it was just being blessed at the right time and being in the right place at the right time. And it is, you know, this little park is just a really special place in Dallas. It's the second oldest park in Dallas. And I just feel very honored to get to be here. And you know, now we're trying to just, it's a truly a community park, and I want to just create the foundation for the next 100 years of the park.
Wow. So the park's been around for over a century, you know, and people think, you know, Texas is brand new, like everything in Texas is brand new, but that is absolutely not the case. And there's plenty of wonderful organizations like the Conservancy in Dallas that have been around for a good amount of period of time. And it kind of gives Dallas, helps give Dallas its unique and special character. The one thing I really appreciate about what you shared, Tiffany, is that you told me, you mentioned that you had multiple friends that brought up that this role would be a great fit for you coming out of COVID. And, you know, I think, you know, folks from a development perspective in particular, if certain people are, you know, being asked by multiple people, you need to join this organization or be involved, definitely listen to that, because there's definitely going to be some sort of energetic match, obviously, because multiple people see it between a person and an organization. And with that, Chris, I'd love for you to share a little bit about how you got involved with the Conservancy.
Well, I my career has been mostly in nonprofit religious organizations, working in operations and fundraising. And so when I saw this opportunity, I just, you know, sort of did a little research and learned more about the organization, and then, you know, just kind of send in my resume and had this awesome interview with this wonderful Tiffany Divis. It was, we had so much fun together, and it was just one of those things. It was sort of like ordained from the beginning that this was going to be a great fit. So, and similar to, you know, Tiffany, you know, my goal is to, wherever I go, to make a positive difference and to leave things better than I found them.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, that's really probably what sealed the deal for us to be a good team in working on this park, is that Tiffany has such a strong passion about making things better and making it the best it can be and doing things well. And, you know, making sure that we leave a nice legacy for the residents of Dallas in the future.
That's fantastic. And there's a couple of things that you said, Chris, that are really interesting. One is I want to address to you, and then the other I want to address to both of you. But first is, you know, share a little bit, you know, what is the difference between working and fundraising with a secular organization versus a religious one? Because I love, you know, I haven't had a guest on to date that has, you know, an extensive background in that. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on kind of the difference between secular and religious fundraising for, you know, from a nonprofit perspective?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I think part of it is, you know, religious nonprofits have sort of that tie to the faith, you know, whatever the faith may be, whether it's, a Unitarian or a Methodist or a Baptist or a Catholic, you know, so there's always sort of a tie to faith, which, you know, is advantageous in some ways, but also not in others, because there's a guilt factor sometimes when it comes to faith. I think the thing with a secular organization like the Turtle Creek Conservancy is that you're able to reach a broader segment of the population. You know, you can make this park, this mission mean more to more people. So I think that's a huge advantage for us, that you know, we're able to reach a broader group of folks. I think one of the things that's interesting is, as you said earlier, Rob, you know, there's so many ways for people to get involved or to enter the park and be a part of what we do. So it's, you know, there are events, there are community events, there are member events, there are, you know, special fundraising things we do. There's lots of ways for people to
be involved. A lot of volunteering opportunities.
Yeah, so it's a great opportunity. Whereas, you know, with religious, it's basically one way. You're coming to church on Sunday, or you're involved in a Sunday school class. So it's not nearly as broad spectrum as what we get to work with here.
That's really interesting. I'm glad you shared the perspective and the differences with that, because it's, you know, because people, I don't want to say people tie those two things together, but you know, you all, both of those lanes do similar things, but, and I really appreciate you kind of explaining the dichotomy and the difference with that. And the second question that I had with what you said earlier, Chris, that involves both of you, is I can tell, and you know, I had the fortune of being seated with you at an event recently. You all have a wonderful rapport with each other. So talk about, you know, what the secret is in maintaining a really strong relationship between leaders within your own team to really benefit the overall community. And Tiffany, I'd love for you to answer first.
Well, you know, I've been very blessed with the team that is here. We have four employees, so we're strong but mighty. And I would say that having hired them all, you know, you try to find the right person for the right position, and find a person that you would want to be with, or that you respect. And in any working, you know, it's not that every day is great and you don't have disappointments and challenges as in any relationship. But I do think we really are, you know, work hard. Both everyone on our team is very committed to this park being as great as it can be for the community of Dallas, and wanting to have events that make a difference and stay relevant to the city of Dallas and just provide a beautiful green space. And so I think, you know, again, we just work together really well, and there's no I in team. And so really, it's just teammanship and working together, just literally day in and day out in the trenches, you know, to get things done, whatever it takes.
And it sounds like it's really, a lot of it's about establishing trust is really what the undercurrent of what that is that, you know, between your team, and especially with a smaller team, there really does have to be a lot of trust so that the whole organization can be mighty, like you were talking about, when, you know, all four of you are together and can kind of lift all boats.
Yeah. I mean, there's no place to hide.
That is very, very true. And Chris, I would love your perspective, you know, on that, and just in terms of, in terms of like your leadership and, you know, clicking with others, what piece of advice would you give to people in terms of, especially with a smaller team, really making sure that you're creating a cohesive bond with your, you know, with your organization and the members in it?
I think it's about the communication between the team members. I think, you know, with Tiffany as our leader, she is so great about what you see is what you get, you know, being open. And, you know, if there are issues or challenges or things that we need, priorities that we need to reset, she's very clear about that. And that's been really helpful. And, you know, again, because our team is small, we've been able to, you know, we juggle lots of different roles and wear lots of different hats, but no one really has like a weird territorial ownership of anything, because we know that we're all working toward the same goal. And that's the beauty of, you know, really the way Tiffany leads, is that it's about the job and it's about making this park better. And it's not about a personality or anybody receiving certain kudos over anybody else. So it's been a really great situation. I mean, we work hard at the Conservancy. We do. It's really, you know, it's wonderful, but we do work hard, and it's easy to work well together when you're working as hard as we work.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because, and we'll hop into the event in a minute, but I do want to say one thing first, and that is, you know, I can always tell when I'm walking into an event how cohesive it is by the energy that everyone brings into it. And it really does start with the staff. And when I can see the staff having fun, I know that they all really operate almost like a familial unit, which is what it, you know, which is what you all do. And you can really sense that from the second, you know, the second you walk into the door. And, you know, we'll talk about how great a day at the races is in a moment. But, you know, before that, I want to touch upon something, you know, that you all were talking about with the mission. And that is really the importance of preservation, and, you know, and making sure that those historic spaces and green spaces are preserved. So I'd love to hear each of your perspectives on how preservation is important to maintain the integrity and soul of a city, especially a fast-growing city like Dallas. And Chris, I'd love for you to start, and then Tiffany can follow with that.
Sure. Well, it's interesting because as you know, in Austin, you know, things get torn down and you kind of hope that they don't ever go away, but that happens sometimes. We're lucky in that our park is the second oldest park in Dallas. It was bought by the city of Dallas in 1909, but had already been a park for 17 years. So, you know, we're lucky in that it has some historical relevance to the city. We're also lucky in that there's this wonderful building, Arlington Hall, that was built back in the 30s. Actually probably before the 30s, but that we now are the caretakers of. And so there, you know, we're lucky in that the preservation that we oversee is protected by the city. The city's never going to get rid of Turtle Creek Park. They're never going to get rid of Arlington Hall. It's too much a benchmark and a really monument to who the city is and has been. So we're really lucky in that regard. Because a lot of, you know, buildings in town, if they get sold or someone's not looking after them, it's, you know, they're kind of on the chopping block. But for us, we just feel really lucky that this organization was formed in the late 90s, and that its role solely is to oversee the care and preservation of this 20-acre park and the building. And it's, you know, it's a wonderful thing. You know, the tricky thing is, how do we continue to be relevant to our community and providing community events for people to gather while also, you know, being able to raise the funds we have to raise to keep the park.
Fantastic. And Tiffany, I'd love to hear your perspective on, you know, your point of view with preservation and how it's important in maintaining, you know, the integrity and the soul of Dallas.
Yes. Well, you know, when they first designed this park or started increase the size of the park to 20 acres, this was really seen as the jewel in the middle of the city and our own central park in Dallas, Texas. And so we do offer 20 acres of outdoor, beautiful green space in the middle of our urban environment. And I think one thing that's really interesting to know is that we have a very rare post oak arbor of trees. And this type of post oak doesn't grow on its own. It grows on its own, and it does not, you can't just plant these trees. And You know, we now, I think we have about 20 of them throughout the park. And it's now, you know, our mission to keep these little, I mean, they're huge trees. They're 100-year-old trees, 150-year-old trees. And we really, and they're very sensitive to motion, sidewalks, they're sensitive trees. So we're going to do anything that we can to preserve those trees, to keep that canopy of trees and that natural history to of Texas, since these are, again, a natural post, a Texas post oak tree. And then also the canopy of trees. If Arlington Hall is a historic treasure for the city of Dallas, but, and, you know, in this building and the building that was there previously in this park, they had, they used to have blood drives and they had dances during DSO dances during the World War I and World War II. And it had one of the very first swimming pools in Dallas here on this property and playgrounds. So, you know, people, we say come home to the park, because this really has been a park that people have enjoyed for, you know, again, for over 100 years. But now what we really want to protect is the canopy of trees. And with the outreach of the Dallas Branch Out organization of part of Dallas Park and Rec, we were able to plant 75 trees in December. And I just think, again, that's going to make sure and ensure this canopy of trees and that this park stays here and vibrant and the ecosystem is healthy again for the next 100 years. So we're just really proud of that and want to protect that for, again, the future generations of Dallasites so they can enjoy nature in the middle of this urban environment.
That, you know, that, thank you so much for explaining, especially with the post oak trees, because those are really special trees and really building a tree canopy, because it really is a majestic space. And one of the things that I've always appreciated about the park and Arlington Hall is, you know, there's a lot of very prominent people in Dallas who really believe in that space. I know many, you know, many families have hosted weddings there. You know, Society of Texas has a weddings issue we do every year. And we've had, you know, events that were held at Arlington Hall or receptions held at Arlington Hall several times. And it really is a beautiful space. And if you get community leaders behind your space, you're really helping situate yourself for success. And I think that's one of the things you all as an organization do so well, is you really do tie in prominent people in the community so that they're using it as a celebratory thing for momentous occasions in their lives, because they can get engaged under one of those beautiful canopy of trees, and then they can go and they can have their reception at Arlington Hall, and they can use the space in so many different ways, like Chris was talking about earlier. So, you know, thanks for sharing kind of, you know, the importance of preservation, how it makes your space, you know, really unique. And before we, you know, before we hop into the event, you know, I know you all have a pretty good board as well. And, you know, I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about tying, you know, the board and contribute, how it contributes to the success of a signature fundraising event, and how you use, you know, that engaged board to do that. And Tiffany, I know you have such a wealth of knowledge in, you know, both with boards and with fundraising. I'd love for you to start that question and, you know, talk about the secret in making sure that you have and recruit an engaged board that really does help bring in the dollars and the fundraising.
Yeah, a board is the foundation of any organization, because they really are, help, you know, besides, do they're not day in and day out, but they are literally your ambassadors within the community. And they bring in resources, time, volunteering, and their groups of influence. And again, you can't, to pull off an event like this or other events in Dallas or wherever you're at, you know, you really need those board members, again, to help you connect to the entire community. And so we're just very blessed with an amazing group of board members. And for instance, Truist Bank has been our presenting, this will be the third year that Truist Bank has been our presenting sponsor. And so we have a representative from Truist Bank on our board. And then again, we, it's, I think, again, you build a board kind of like you do any foundation of a great group and try to put people into place that, one, have a heart for your organization, but also that have some, again, connections in Dallas or resources or, and that really have a heart again for what we do, which that makes it even, they're just another extension of our small family here of the four of us. But, you know, you do become a family with your board members too, because they take on so much and support, you know, our efforts because their mission is our mission. So again, we've been very blessed with an amazing group of board members.
You know, and I'm glad you brought up the word ambassador, because that's really what board members are. And successful board members are going to be great ambassadors for the organization that's going to be able to get major organizations, you know, like Truist Bank, to be a part of a signature fundraising event and really doing that. So I'm really glad. And that's the, really the perfect word I can think of to talk about what a board member is, I guess in a little bit more glamorous way, but it, you know, I'm really glad that you brought that up. And, you know, with that, I definitely want to talk a little bit more about, you know, about A Day at the Races. So, you know, one thing that I like about what you all do is you have this beautiful outdoor space and you tie it to a culturally significant event like the Kentucky Derby. So, Chris, I'd love for you to start with this. How does creating an event around kind of a common cultural event help create a camaraderie among the guests who attend?
That's a good question. Well, it's funny because you were kind of known in town as the longest running Kentucky Derby party in Dallas. And, you know, we get people who come join us for the first time. And they're like, oh, yeah, I've heard of this for years. I've just never been able to come. So, I mean, it is a way for us to get people to be more involved with our organization. You know, I think initially it was, germinated by some younger members of the Conservancy. And they just kind of started this idea and it really grew and grew and grew. So it was kind of a neat, it was a neat thing to see it grow after, 16 years. But it is also a strategy for us to grow, connection to the park and people may be interested in Day at the Races, but they don't really know much about us. So that allows us the opportunity to inform them and educate them about the other things that we do, that it's not just this awesome fun party on the first Saturday in May, but it's also about, preserving and conserving this wonderful park in the middle of Dallas.
Absolutely. And, one of the things, and you were talking about the spaces and kind of experiencing, and I think that's one of the advantages that you all have as an organization is you get to have a culturally significant event in a place that's relevant, that's also yours, that people can actually physically see what they're benefiting. Like they don't have to rely on a video, and we've all been to many wonderful nonprofit events in a ballroom, but the connection, while it can still be strong, is not the same as when you're there. Tiffany, I'd like to talk about, because I know you have lots of, you've done lots of great fundraising over the years. How do you leverage, the actual space to help donors connect with your organization?
Again, I think in particular for Day at the Races, we're really trying to work on a long-term strategy to introduce the park to a wider audience that includes, all ages, and with a emphasis that the park is a destination for everyone that attends or anyone in the community, not just people that live in the high rises right here in the corridor. And again, it's about building relationships. And I have to say, this event, I had not been before. I've always heard about it until I started working here. And it is so exciting. And that it is the best 2 minutes in sports. And it's very exciting. And everybody, it's a great party. A lot of people never even sit. It's like an oversized cocktail reception where people are just having fun, really hanging out together with a band and live music and great food and fun friends. And we also have a live auction, but it is a really exciting, little fun party. And then people at the end of it, because it's in the middle of the day, which is a unique time for a fundraiser. Usually they're either lunch or they're in the evening, and people can go out to a great dinner after or be home to tuck in their kids. So it's really a true, a little event that fills a certain niche.
It is. And the other thing is, because it's in the late afternoon, it's one of those few events, a derby party, where it is dressy, but it doesn't have to be formal either. Meaning right. that you're dressing up, but you don't have to wear, you don't have to wear a cocktail gown or you don't have to wear a bow tie, but you can wear a crazy hat if you want to. So you really kind of get to have fun with the theme and, the event. And, the next question, I'd love each of you to, share your thoughts on it. How do you all offer kind of a fresh take on the theme every year? Because you mentioned, this is one of Dallas's longest running, if not longest running derby party. How do you keep it fresh and fun so that people do keep coming back year after year, obviously mixing it in with new folks, because that's obviously what makes it, makes any event really fun, is always having some new faces mixed with the old.
I would say just logistically, we're always tweaking and making changes to, you know, see what we can make better. And so last year we instituted a VIP reception that was like a tasting, a spirits tasting garden for people, so that as they came, they didn't have to wait too long in line to check in. They could just kind of filter through. We also last year had a wonderful air conditioned tent, which they've not always had before. So sometimes the first Saturday in May can be a beautiful, cool spring day, or it can be a very hot and humid pre-summer day. So, you know, it's just sort of, you know, having the wherewithal to see, oh, we need to make this tweak here, we need to make a change here. And that really has enhanced the event. I mean, what it does, it makes people think, I'm going back next year because I'm not going to be sweating in my fascinator, you know. So those types of things have made a difference, because then you can, you know, as you promote it, people go, oh yeah, I'd love to come to that. That'll be super fun.
And I think we also sometimes switch out the entertainment or switch out some of the vendors, you know, to give something a new experience. Or I think any fun event has moment by moment little surprises or little touches. And so I think that we, you know, we'll keep working toward trying to add those to it, or make little changes so that it's not exactly the same, but of course it's always going to be this fun experience with your friends watching this fabulous race.
Absolutely. And I love how, Tiffany, how you use the word moment by moment, that you're working on creating moments and various opportunities for moments. And they may mix up and vary from year to year, but gosh, you've given me a couple of really good sound bites, you know, during our time together. That was actually a really good, excellent, you know, excellent take on that. So, you know, for those, you know, who have never been to a Derby party before, you know, talk about what people can expect. Like at this year's Day of the Races, what are some things that people can expect to experience while they're there? And we don't necessarily have to have specifics, but just kind of an overall feeling of what, you know, guests can experience, you know, from the time they arrive till the time they leave.
I think walking in, you know, it's elegant. You know, people, again, it's casual. I mean, some men wear shorts with these fabulous jackets and bow ties, but yet, and maybe, you know, little sports shoes, little cute shoes, but they have on shorts. So it's like, that's what you want to wear. It's the Derby, wear what you want. And then, you know, I think for this event, it's not about having to have the actually best hat or biggest hat. A fascinator's great. I mean, people try to be true to form in what's appropriate for the actual Kentucky Derby and want to feel like, you know, we're in Dallas's version of the Derby if you can't get to the actual Derby. And so since people are kind of dressed up in the middle of the day, but again, casually, chic, you know, more of a chic expression of the Derby, then I think that makes it fun. There's so many people that know each other, and just people, I mean, of all ages coming to have a great time, nothing serious, just a time to just relax, have fun, enjoy great food. Again, get to know friends better or get to know new friends. And we do have a live auction that's really a lot of fun. And we always try to, you know, put some different items in that to make that live auction a little more fun. And everybody's anticipating, again, the race. A couple of years ago, I don't know if you remember, but a horse that had just been added that day won the race and no one could believe it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that was like a shocker, like you couldn't even, anyway. And then there's a big band that, you know, a band that plays throughout. So again, I don't know if you've been to the actual Kentucky Derby, but you know, they have, you know, you kind of walk around before the race and at different places have different types of entertainment and food and drink. And so we're kind of, again, just trying to have that experience in Dallas for what we can create in our park.
Wow. So it sounds like a really, really fun day. And, you know, and I know many people have gone to it over the years and they have always raved about it. So, you know, and I know we're running short on time, but I do want to end with one final question. I'd love each of you to, you know, answer, because I love everyone's point of view on this. But what is one successful thing that all galas or signature fundraising events have in common? And Chris, I'd like to start with you, and then we'll end with Tiffany.
I think it's about the mission, what it's for. You know, I think if it's not clear what an event or a gala is for, then it's very difficult to get people to support it and to really be involved with it. I think that's the most important piece of, besides, of course, being well done. You can't have a gala or an event that's, you know, poorly done and be successful. But the for me, the most important thing would be the mission and the sort of like, what is the point? That's the most important thing.
Fantastic. And Tiffany, what about you?
Well, I would say execution is very important so that people would want to come back and you give them something. You, typically, someone is given, for this type of event, someone is paid to attend. And so you want to make sure that you've done all you can do to honor the money that people have given you and trusted in you, to make sure that you are taking their money to either provide an event that is at the standard of which they expect, but at the same time, make sure that their money is going toward the mission for which they have given, and be good stewards of people's money and their time and their investment. And, you know, again, when you have that electricity in a room and you have, we're so blessed with great people, great members, amazing sponsors. So I just think when all those people come together and they're excited about what they're supporting and excited to be together, it just creates a win-win for everyone.
A win-win for everyone. And that's really what fun fundraising events such as a day at the races are about. And, you know, it's truly one of the best places in Texas to spend or watch the Kentucky Derby. So Chris, Tiffany, thank you so much, both of you, for joining us today. We were thrilled to have you on as a guest.
Thanks. You very much.
Absolutely.
And come see the park.
I definitely will. I can't wait. And a day at the races benefiting the Turtle Creek Conservancy will be held on May 4th, 2024 at Arlington Hall in Dallas, Texas. For more information, please visit turtlecreekconservancy.org. And that will do it for this episode of Fun and Fundraising. I'm your host, Rob Giardinelli, reminding you to keep it fun, keep it interesting, and your guests will have a great time. Have a great day, everyone, and take care.